From the studios of KUSP in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Tara Murtha is my guest. She is the author of a great book in the 33 and a Third series. Those are books dedicated to one great record album, and the series offers some of the best music writing you can find. Tara Murtha's entry is Bobby Gentry's Ode to Billy Joe, and is more than just the story of that classic 1967 single, but rather an intriguing and well-researched biography of the enigma that is Bobby Gentry. Tara Murtha, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Ode to Billy Joe, it's got to be the greatest crossover hit in history. It was a folk hit, it was a soul hit, it was a rock hit, it was a pop vocal hit.
Yeah, well, one of the reasons that it made all the charts that it normally, you know, wasn't categorized from the beginning was because when it came out as a single, she had been a working musician for a long time before Ode to Billy Joe. She hadn't been famous in any way, and it was her first real professionally produced record outside of a duet with Jody Reynolds. And nobody knew what she looked like. So program managers at radio stations wanted to know if she was a black woman or a white woman so that they could categorize it. Since to super oversimplify it, if she was white, it would have gotten categorized as country. And if she was black, it would have been soul. And left to their own devices, nobody could agree, what she likely looked like. So it just crossed all genres. It would have boxed her in, and it's interesting to think about, you know, how things would have went differently if her single came out with a headshot.
So she didn't just appear fully formed. You're saying that she had a history. She came from someplace.
Yeah, she had been in California from the time she was 13. So her Ode to Billy Joe, all the press that Capitol put out, and you know, she was introduced to the world as one woman who was her guitarist put it, you know, as if she had just squeezed, you know, Mississippi mud through her toes and walked into the studio. And, you know, that was part of the persona that she was definitely complicit in helping to shape. I mean, she knew that was a good thing, you know, a tantalizing marketing persona. But, no, she, in fact, had studied music. She was a multi-instrumentalist. She had been working in nightclub circuits around Southern California for almost a decade. She was dancing and singing in Vegas. You know, I talked to one guy who booked the Blue Room in Las Vegas, and he was talking about hearing Ode to Billy Joe when it was all over the radio in the summer of 1967 and how he was trying to get her on the phone to play for him. And he found out that she had actually been singing in a little quartet, a little Hawaiian-themed quartet, during the intermissions for his shows at the Blue Room, and had no idea. So she sort of was hidden in plain sight for everyone for about a decade before she broke out with Ode to Billy Joe.
It was the 3rd of June, another sleepy, dusty Delta day. I was out chopping cotton and my brother was baling hay. And at dinner time we stopped and walked back to the house to eat. And Mama hollered at the back door, y'all remember to wipe your feet. And then she said, I got some news this morning from Choctaw Ridge. Today Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. And Papa said to Mama as he passed around the black-eyed peas, well, Billy Joe never had a lick of sense. Pass the biscuits, please. There's 5 more acres in the lower 40 I got to plow. And Mama said it was a shame about Billy Joe anyhow. Seems like nothing ever comes to no good up on Choctaw Ridge. And now Billy Joe McAllister's jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
Sonically, it was just completely different from anything on the radio. What's really interesting about that is that originally the single that was going to be released as the A-side was Mississippi Delta, which is also on the album, and they couldn't be more sonic opposites. Mississippi Delta is a really, like, raunchy, you know, like R&B soul, Aretha Franklin style. And Mississippi Delta is unique to everything on the record. It stands out. You know, it has full horn section. They were going to distribute that. It came to them fully formed, and they asked her if she had any more, quote, regional material. And she had been writing for years, so she brought in a few tunes, and they picked out Ode to Billy Joe and put some strings on it, called up Jimmy Haskell and asked him to score it with strings. And often people say that it was a B-side that the DJs favored, but actually that switch was made in-house at Capitol once they heard Ode with the strings on it. They distributed that as the A-side.
So Bobby Gentry didn't know that she had Dynamite there, that was the song that was going to make her.
I think that she did. I do. I mean, it makes sense when you look at what was going, you know, burning up the charts in summer of 67, that she would have tried to break through with Mississippi Delta. I mean, she never pretended that she wasn't trying to become a star and make money, you know.
Right.
That was her. Yeah, she was definitely ambitious, and had every intention to be successful. And I talked to a man named Frank Lacuna, who was working with her that year in 1967. She really loved Hawaiian music and did this whole kind of Hawaiian routine when she was before Ode to Billy Joe, and he toured with her on that. And he was telling me that he remembers when she was saying Capitol wants another song, and she's going to bring in Ode, and how everyone's going to, you know, wonder what was thrown off the bridge. I mean, she was very aware that she had compelling material. I don't think she could have anticipated that it was quite the, I guess the word viral wouldn't have been used for it back then, but yeah. But quite the sensation that it turned out to be. But she was a very confident, very confident about her talents, very confident that she was going to make it one day, and it was just a matter of when.
It is such a fantastic lyric, and when you think about the lyrics that had been in music up until 1967, I mean, 1967 is kind of the year that rock music became art. I mean, the switch from singing songs about cars and girls to singing Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds and stuff like that. And her lyrics are so cinematic and moody, the pass the biscuits, please, and all that. And you said that the mystery of what gets thrown off the bridge was secondary to her. She wanted to sing about something else.
Yeah, I mean, I think, I was just thinking about your previous question, and I think a big part of the reason it was a hit was the how differently it sounded from everything on the radio and the mystery. But I think the mystery, I forgot to say that the mystery was enhanced by the fact that people assumed that it was first person, you know? So once they got a load of her in this beautiful woman, I mean, they really assumed, there's sort of a gender component to that too, right? You
right.
usually assume that what women are singing is more confessional or more first person and less assumed to be an artistic creation. In the first stanza, initially as she wrote it, she described the character and named her and everything. Her name was Sally Jane Ellison.
Mm.
And that got lopped off somewhere along the way, and that remains to be seen if it's a matter of dispute if it was ever recorded and sliced out in the studio or never recorded to begin with. But it's on the...
It was good editing in any case, right?
It was right. Kelly Gordon, the producer, edited it out, and it's in the lyrics that she donated to Ole Miss. So I think that was another part of the mystery. But ultimately, right, everybody became obsessed and still is. I mean, as I was writing the book and people were aware, I would get people tweet at me. So what was thrown off the bridge? You know, like contact me. And she always gave, you know, the same answer that was incidental to the point of the song, and it was really a meditation on southern manners, you know, and a more existential commentary on how we can never really know what's going on with people, even when you're sitting right there at the supper table.
The indifference that people feel towards mm-hmm. other people, and she wasn't necessarily making an editorial comment. She was just saying that it's there.
No, yeah, I think it was purely observational. I don't think it wasn't a lament. It wasn't, you know, so that's probably a good thing. You know, I just can't, you know, you don't really know what other people are going through in their tragedies. And she was particularly interested in the way Southern culture deals with, you know, tragedy and birth. And I think because the customs that she grew up with, she noticed the same customs that are meant to, you know, sort of hold society together, like everyone coming in at supper time, you know, can be wielded to keep everyone apart. You know, the subject of many a you do her wealthy story.
Brother said he recollected when he and Tom and Billy Joe and put a frog down my back at the Carroll County Picture Show. And wasn't I talking to him after church last Sunday night? I'll have another piece of apple pie. You know it don't seem right. I saw him at the sawmill yesterday on Choctaw Ridge. And now you tell me Billy Joe's jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge. Mama said to me, child, what's happened to your appetite? Well, I've been cooking all morning and you haven't touched a single bite. That nice young preacher, Brother Taylor, dropped by today. Said he'd be pleased to have dinner on Sunday. Oh, by the way, he said he saw a girl that looked a lot like you up on Choctaw Ridge. And she and Billy Joe was throwing something off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
We're talking with Tara Murtha, and her book is called Bobby Gentry's Ode to Billy Joe. The song also seems to me to be hearkening forward to the singer-songwriter era, which hadn't really caught on yet. I mean, when you think of Fire and Rain by James Taylor, it kind of has a mm-hmm. Ode to Billy Joe feel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she actually, one of James Taylor's earliest performances was on her show. She hosted a BBC show, sort of a variety show from, you know, 68, 69, and 70, and she had James Taylor on and Donovan and all those kinds of artists that we associate with that movement today.
You can find a little bit of that on YouTube. I saw her duet with Donovan on First There Is a Mountain. That's
mm-hmm.
that's great.
Yeah, just
that.
A little bit. And unfortunately, a lot of the episodes have been erased. I mean, I talked to Stanley Dorfman, the director of the show, and thinking maybe he had them in his closet somewhere. And, you know, even he doesn't have copies of them. Only a few still exist. So he was also really, really clear to tell me that she co-directed the show. Much more than it would normally be with an artist. You know, he did tons of those kinds of specials for the BBC, and you know, she didn't get credit because they said that the BBC didn't give artists credit for doing that kind of thing and directing. But he wanted to make sure that I knew and put that out there too.
And she was also the producer of her record.
Well, right, yeah. So that was what was so crazy when I first started really digging into the song and to the story, you know, to her story. She hasn't been, I wouldn't say seen in public, but she hasn't appeared in public as Bobby Gentry or performed since the very early 80s. And, you know, that certainly was a big part of the intrigue for me. It was her biggest hit is based on a mystery, and then she does a disappearing act herself and sort of parallels each other. And then I came across an interview in 1974, and that was in a magazine called After Dark. It was like a gay entertainment magazine out of Las Vegas, where she wound up telling the writer, and at this point she wasn't associated with Capitol Records anymore, so she was free, you know, to say what she wanted to, and she told them that she actually produced the record and didn't get any credit. And that quote had been quoted before, you know, a short version of it, around here and there, but I was just really surprised that it hadn't been dug into. It struck me as a pretty important statement to check out. So that became sort of the central thread that I was investigating during research of the book.
The rest of the album, is there anything else on the album that is Ode to Billy Joe-esque?
Oh, yeah, there's plenty of songs on the album that's that she has that kind of signature rhythm, you know. She was really into Latin jazz at the time and Hawaiian music, and you could feel that, like, finger-plucked kind of rhythm going on. Of course, it's through Chickasaw County Child. I love that song. And Bugs and Lazy Willie have the same kind of recognizable rhythm. And she wrote all the songs on the album except for Nikki Hokey, which was written by the Vegas Brothers and a gentleman named Jim Ford.
Hmm. Yeah. And she made several other albums, right? Like six albums, right? Six albums, something like that?
Well, some of them are compilations and stuff, but a handful of albums for Capitol. But her last one, you know, Ode was in 67, and her last one was in 1971, Patchwork for Capitol. So she was really an active artist at Capitol for a short period of time. But she did get full producer credit on Patchwork, and I think it's not a coincidence that she got the full producer credit before heading out.
And what do you mean by that? She was... demanding.
Well, she had been fighting for, you know, I think she didn't get any credit on Ode to Billy Joe and wound up talking about it through the 70s, you know, and mentioning it on Johnny Carson. It clearly bothered her, as it should. So she fought, even though it was very unusual for a woman to get producer credit at all, she fought for the producer credit and got it for the Patchwork album in 71. And she didn't put out another record on Capitol. After that, she really focused on her live act. She was based in Las Vegas, but traveled around, but kind of turned all of her attention to live performances and didn't really record until later on at Warner Brothers around the time the movie was coming out.
Well, she did another version of Ode to Billy Joe for them.
She did for the movie, yeah. Rather than have Capitol put it would have been a forced reissue at that time. She re-recorded it almost note for note for Warner Brothers and cut herself a bigger, a better deal on it. So Capitol, of course, reissued it as well. But
can you tell the difference really between the two records?
Not really. No, it's pretty exact. And she said, you know, the first one we cut in 4 minutes and 15 seconds, and this one took hours to make it the same.
That's interesting.
She's a smart businesswoman. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. She also did an album with Glenn Campbell. I love that record.
Yep, some cool duets with Glenn. I like that record, too. Yeah. But there's not that much known about... He doesn't really address their relationship very much when he's written about it. But it's pretty cool brother and pop country crossover arms.
Yeah, yeah. They look pretty cool together.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen them on TV. He had a television show. She was a guest frequently, right?
Oh, yeah, she was considered like a good luck charm for all of those variety shows, and she was on the Johnny Cash Show, and, you know, she was on all the shows all the time, Smothers Brothers.
Warm welcome to our Mississippi River Delta Queen, Miss Bobby Gentry.
I remember it all very well, looking back, it was the summer I turned 18. We lived in a one-room run-down shack on the outskirts of New Orleans. We didn't have money for food or rent, to say the least, we were hard-pressed. Then Mama spent every last penny she had to buy me a dancing dress. Mama washed and combed and curled my hair, and she painted up my eyes and lips. And then I stepped into the satin dancing dress, it was fit on the side, cleaned up to my hips. It was red with velvet trim, and it fit me good. And staring back from the looking glass was a woman where a heck of a kid had stood. Here's your one chance, Bansy, don't let me down. Here's your one chance, Bansy, don't let me down. Lord, forgive me for what I do. If you want out, well, it's up to you. Now, don't let me down. Your mama's gonna help you move uptown.
Don't let me down.
Mama, dad, a little bit of perfume on me. Can't she kiss my cheek? And I saw the tears well up in her troubled eyes when she started. my pitiful shack, and then she looked at me and took a ragged breath. Paws run off, and I'm real sick, and the baby's gonna starve to death. She handed me a heart-shaped locket and said, to thine own self be true. And I shivered as I watched a roach crawl across the toe of my high-heeled shoe. It sounded like somebody else was talking, asking, Mama, what do I do? Just be nice to the gentleman, fancy, and they'll be nice to you. Cause here's your one chance, fancy, don't let me down. Here's your one chance, fancy, don't let me down. Lord, forgive me for what I do. You want out? Well, it's up to you now. Get on out, girl. You better start moving uptown.
We're talking to Tara Murtha, and her book in the 33 and a Third series is Bobby Gentry's Ode to Billy Joe. I'm Gary Shapiro. This is from the bookshelf. I saw her on the British show Markham and Wise, and she does a song, and I love the move that she does. She's got this kind of move. I've never seen it.
Yeah, the Gentry strut is what Las Vegas reviewers would call it. And she does, she just sort of swivels her hips to one side and then swivels back to the other side and does this little kind of two-step maneuver that really highlights what the one reviewer called her anatomical forte. She wore those skin-tight pantsuits.
Really? No, I know.
Everyone jokes now about your pantsuits with Hillary. These were pantsuits of another sort, red satin jumpsuits, yeah, that she designed herself. She designed all her costumes, made her costumes, and designed the costumes for everyone in the show. That was another passion of hers, fashion
design. Her costumes were pretty revealing.
Sexy broad, knew what to do.
The mystery of where she went. I mean, she's still alive and well, right?
That's my understanding, yep. Still alive and well and just living a private life. Not, from what I understand, not a recluse, you know, nothing wrong. It's really an amazing, it's just an amazing feat in modern culture, right, in the TMZ world, to maintain that life without being a total recluse. But that's my understanding. And she, you know, there's glimmers that kind of indicate that she might be interested in working or coming out. She's apparently, you know, everybody has an almost story with Bobby Gentry. Promoters almost got her to perform in, you know, a few years ago, and researchers almost got her to talk to them for a book and that kind of thing. I went through it myself.
I almost got her, Gary.
I almost did. you know, and it's all very polite, and, you know, there's no indication that she doesn't that she, you know, renounces her performing years or anything like that, but she just isn't interested in participating in any work about it.
She never had any kind of a farewell concert or anything. She just gradually disappeared.
No, she did. It was just gradual. There was no farewell tour. I think, you know, my personal theory is that she just was taking a little bit of time to think about a new direction. You know, she had a child in the late 70s, and the Vegas thing was coming to an end. She was hugely successful in Vegas. She broke showroom attendance records. She broke pay, you know, landmark checks, you know, $2 million checks. And, you know, she was getting a little older then, doing two shows a night, and I think that she sort of thinking about how to maneuver into film and TV, which is what she always wanted to. She always wanted to move behind the scenes, you know. And I think maybe just a little bit of time passed, and she looked at it and figured she'd have to be all in or all out, and just decided to be all out rather than kind of do something. She did something full stop. You know, so you don't normally write the music, compose the music, play the instruments, design the costumes, you know, handpick the choreographer, and do all that kind of stuff unless you're really workaholic, which she called herself. So I think it was somewhat accidental, and then she just decided why bother returning the spotlight if she wasn't going to be full on.
Gosh, maybe she's got tons of records that she's been making, songs that she's been recording.
Of course she does. She has records and books and paintings. She's a painter as well. She painted the covers of Patchwork and of Fancy. I think that we're going to see all sorts of things someday, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe an autobiography, or That's the disconnect, Gary. Like, if you, she was very interested in, you know, spent, you know, often mentioned how she produced Ode. I mean, she was very interested in making sure that people knew that she was accomplished and, you know, did all these things. And then once she stepped out of the spotlight and kind of cut herself out of the commercial, or at least the public commercial part of the art world, you know, how could she not have any interest in legacy at all now? You know, that's the big mystery to me. More so than what was thrown off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
A year has come and gone since we heard the news about Billy Joe. Brother married Becky Thompson, they bought a store in Tupelo. There was a virus going round, Papa caught it and he died last spring. And now Mama doesn't seem to want to do much of anything. And me, I spend a lot of time picking flowers up on Choctaw Ridge. Drop them into the muddy water off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
I love this book, and all of you people will love it too. It's called Bobby Gentry's Ode to Billy Joe, and Tara Murtha is the author, and thank you so much for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf talking about it.
Thanks for having me. It's been really fun.
Well, that's it for this week's edition of From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com. You can subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, and you can like us on Facebook. I want to thank my guest, Tara Murtha. Her book is called Bobby Gentry's Ode to Billy Joe, and it's in the 33 and a third series. That's a great little book. From the Bookshelf is produced by Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.